Hey Don, hi. Good to see you, and thank you
Good.
for joining us for this interview.
Good to see you too, Dave.
Just for everybody who may be listening, Don has taught at Lamia Schling before on several topics, and we're very happy to have Don come and teach again, particularly this very practical and both practical and profound topic. So I wanted to give Don a chance to introduce the topic, and also for everybody here to get to know Don a little bit better if you haven't met Don before. So I've got some questions for Don, a bit of an interview experience here. One of the things that's special about Don is the amount of training that he's undertaken to be a teacher, which includes attending the, I think it was the first time the master's program was offered. Can you tell us a bit about the master's program, what that's like?
Sure, Dave. It certainly was a life-changing experience for me. In 1998, that began a 7-year program that took place at Istituto Lama Tsongkhapa over in Italy. Small little town, Pomaia, but a wonderful center there. And Geshe Jampa Gyatso, my precious teacher over there, had been asked by Lama Yeshe many, many years ago, before Lama Yeshe had passed away, whether he would do something like this. And apparently, he did a couple of false starts, like got a few years going under in terms of this type of study, and then things fell apart. But for whatever reason, it all came together and stayed together throughout 1998 till the end of 2004. There were about 40 of us that joined at the beginning, and I would say about 22 or so made it through to the end. And we, of course, had other people joining. It's essentially five different topic areas, different fields of study, that three of them are based on what are studied normally in the monastic institution, and then the other two are in the from the Tantric College. But essentially, it's a miniature sort of program of what the Geshes normally study in the monasteries, and it was pretty much full time. We did have a little bit of time off every year for a summer break and what have you, but it was an amazing experience in terms of immersing yourself in the study of the Dharma at that level, and again, I'm really indebted to Geshe Jampa Gyatso, who fulfilled Lama Yeshe's promise of getting a program like this finally up and running. I think they're on to the third round of it now. And of course, I think there's plan there. I don't know if there are definite plans to start it at other centers, but it certainly is in the shape now to be able to be administered at various other centers around the world.
It's
So
amazing
quite
to hear.
fortunate.
It's amazing to hear this is available to Westerners, and everybody's listening. That's something you may consider doing. How would you recommend that to other people?
Definitely, definitely. You know, to me, the even though I mean, I had only studied in this tradition in FPMT for about 2 years before I went to the master's program, so I can't say I had a huge amount of Dharma study under my belt. But you know, getting immersed in it like that, it's sort of like when they say, you know, that you're gonna, if you want, the best way to learn a language is just go to the other country and, not, just learn it by speaking it with other people. And in a similar way, this was true, because once you get into a Dharma environment like that, where you're studying and talking to other students and discussing the material, your knowledge grows exponentially. So it's definitely something to consider. If you can't go live, I think there are ways to do it online. And of course, now I'm not even sure what's happening live there at Istituto Lama Tsongkhapa. But essentially, yeah, it's an amazing program. I was really hoping we would be able to get one started here in the U.S. at some point for people to be able to come here rather than always have to go to another country, but
Yeah,
we'll
maybe in the
see.
future. We can look forward
Yeah.
to that. Yeah.
And of course in Canada too.
We've had
Just
some conversations about that. We've Toronto has an abundance of Geshes. Some of them quite famous scholars while they were still in their monasteries in India. Many of them now doing things like driving taxis. So it's kind of is crazy a little bit. We certainly could do it here if if all the other conditions came together, we shouldn't have the teachers for it.
Yeah, I mean, it does take a lot of administration in terms of making it work. And if you're going to do it, of course, as it's meant to be as a residential program, then you have to have everybody, you know, housed and deal with all of the logistics of all of that. But, you know, if I was really hoping, again, somewhere in North America, we'd be able to figure out a way to do that. Maybe some of these centers now that are coming back from the pandemic that have been mostly retreat centers could look at that possibility of becoming like more of a residential study center. But
that'd be a good idea.
That'd be nice, but we'll see.
So you've been a resident teacher since finishing the program. What's it like to be a resident teacher in a Dharma center?
Yeah, I mean, those of you who don't know, I became the resident teacher at Thupten Norbu Ling here in Santa Fe in 2006. I started teaching towards the end of 2005. Venerable Connie Miller was here, and things kind of shifted around, and I became the resident teacher towards the end of 2006. My term as resident teacher finished in the beginning of this year, so I'm sort of a freelance teacher now, or whatever you want to call them, touring teacher. Uh-huh. That was quite a duration of time to be a resident teacher. And the experience of being a resident teacher, of course, is that you become more of more akin to what a pastor or a minister that is assigned to a particular congregation. So you really get to work with people in a much deeper way in terms of you being involved in their spiritual development, helping them to progress through their own study and practice and what have you. And of course, the opportunities to teach are plentiful because there were always things that, you know, room in the calendar to be able to, you know, add other programming and what have you. So I was really blessed in being able to do that. There were only, I think, a handful of people from the master's program that became resident teachers at one point or another. And I'm not sure that there are even any right now that are resident teachers, Wai Chung, who just became the new education director for the foundational level programs for the Education Services Department of FPMT. I think he's part-time resident teacher at the center in Sydney, but then the rest of the time he's doing that job. But it's a challenging job. You do have to put in a lot of time and energy to kind of attend to everything and be involved in all the aspects of the center, the pujas and the, you know, things that go on that are just, you know, plentiful, but really, really rewarding. And I'm so glad I had the opportunity to do that.
I was very impressed about what I heard about one of the more community programs. I forget what it was called, but It was a program that was so popular that the many people who weren't attending anything else, the community members, it was kind of like a support mm-hmm. group. I thought that was such an amazing program. Mm-hmm. What was it called?
Yeah, if you're thinking about the Dharma Friends group or whatever that we had here, that was like the idea was that, and we know this from our own, perhaps many of you have grown up in, you know, religious traditions where the churches would take care of their membership. And so we wanted to make sure that we had something in place to be able to take care of people who were hospitalized for some period of time or simply, you know, needing some assistance, what have you. And so that group, Dharma Care group, I think is what it ended up being called. They were really, I don't know how much they've been able to do with everything being a bit more disjointed right now and people being a bit more hesitant about offering services to others because of the virus and what have you, but they were really helped out a lot of people because we had a number of people in our community that did require some assistance, just even like to go grocery shopping for them or do things like that. And so yeah, I mean, it's nice to be part of a community, and particularly a community that has grown as much as this one has. Thupten Norbu Ling now has its own building that should be opening a little bit later this year and has really changed from just a little sort of hole in the wall center that when I first started teaching to something that is attracting teachers from all over the world and has really grown their online program as well. But yeah, the Dharma Care Group was sort of an idea that some of our members developed, and I helped a little bit with the formation of that. But it's nice if centers can do that for them.
Yeah, I really aspire to that.
Good.
Can you talk a little bit about the topic that we've asked you to teach, the mind training or thought transformation?
Yeah, I mean, if we talk about this term mind training, well, we could say everything that the Buddha taught is mind training, because it's all about transforming our minds, transforming our thoughts, changing our deluded, crazy states of mind into something that is seeing things correctly and in line with all of the qualities that we want to develop in order to be of best benefit to others. And so this technique that is called mind training is a sort of specific way of working with the mind, a genre of teachings that came out of Tibet primarily, though it has its roots in some of the Indian tradition that came from the Buddha, of course, the Mahayana Sutras, as well as Master Shantideva, who wrote the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. But this whole tradition was brought into Tibet in about 1,000 years ago by Lama Atisha. And he had, of course, found these teachings from a variety of masters. And the work that we'll be looking at is said to be one of the heart works that's based on some of Lama Atisha's main teachings. It's by Geshe Chikawa, who was one of what are called the Kadampa Geshes. The Kadampa Geshes were all of these spiritual friends that essentially developed from Lama Atisha's heart disciple, who's known as Drom Thompa. Drom Thompa trained a number of people in all these teachings he received from Atisha, and this lineage of these Lojong or mind training teachings was kept very secretive. And Geshe Chikawa, who is the author of the text we'll be studying, actually shared them with others. He decided that it was important to sort of expand the audience for these teachings. And why they weren't shared so easily is simply because they can be misunderstood, because they involve a sort of, I don't know, Buddhist alchemy, kind of working with baser things and things that are more challenging, and transforming those into the path. And so this text definitely deals with that whole idea, as well as a number of bits of advice. There's something like 52, 51 slogans in this 7 points of mind training. And we'll be going into all of those in detail and learning how to practice them, how to incorporate them into our lives. But the Lojong teachings are really priceless. I mean, we can say certainly all traditions to some degree, all spiritual traditions teach some way of working with difficulties, challenges, to make everything that we do into something spiritual. But nonetheless, I think these teachings kind of go so far beyond anything I've heard of from other traditions. And therefore, they are a little challenging. Not to say that, you know, this is easy stuff to just immediately adapt into our lives, but nonetheless, I think that this is, you know, the priceless teachings that we really can benefit from, particularly in our day and age. You know, there is so much that is kind of there to be worked with, so many sources for the delusions based on, you know, the craziness in our world, the challenges that we're facing physically in terms of the planet, in terms of people, governments. You know, whatever. I mean, there are no shortages of things to work with and transform. So these teachings are very, very precious. And again, I would encourage, if you have any interest in that, to join us for that, because I think you'll find something in that 7 points of mind training that will give you some tools to work with in your daily life to help transform everything you do into a path of awakening. Sorry, some things fell off my shelf here. So.
Don, can I ask you a personal question? Can you give an example in your own life how this
Sure.
genre of teaching has helped you?
I think even just dealing with the pandemic, you know, when things first started, and of course, you know, the pandemic was one of these indicators of the nature of reality that we sometimes don't think about, the fact of uncertainty that there's all of a sudden, you know, when we were over a year ago faced with the reality of having to change our lives so drastically around this virus. And, you know, there was some suffering that we all experienced to some degree. I mean, maybe people who were extremely introverted and didn't really want to go out anyway, you know, we're very happy to have everything sort of shut off so that there was no obligation to do that. But there were very few people who didn't experience some form of suffering or difficulty. So I found myself certainly applying these teachings. One of the techniques that we'll be going into as part of these teachings on the 7 points of mind training is around Tonglen. Tonglen is a very powerful technique that's taught in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, which has been adopted by many other spiritual traditions, Buddhist and non-Buddhist, as a means of trying to connect with the suffering of others as a way of kind of enlarging ourselves so that our own suffering isn't quite so difficult or unbearable. And so I found myself gravitating towards these teachings even in the first few months of the pandemic, just to, you know, really recognize what was going on in our world. You know, the tendency we have, of course, our own suffering, we feel often is too much to begin with. But then when we look at the suffering of the world, it's very hard to embrace that and to really take that on and hold that in our hearts and our minds. But that's really the stuff from which our courageous compassion develops. And so the idea is here is that anytime you're working with your own suffering or you see the suffering of others, to do this practice of Tonglen, which is essentially the willingness to take that suffering on ourselves. Have the courage to be able to, you know, say, I'm willing to endure whatever suffering there is so that this being or whoever we're thinking of might be free from that. And then we have the accompanying thought of giving away whatever we have that brings us some measure of happiness so that others can experience happiness, peace, what have you. So it's a way of keeping our hearts open. So anyway, back in the example is during the beginning stage of the pandemic, certainly what didn't immediately go to this, I'm not that good of a practitioner, but nonetheless, over time, you know, found these teachings, especially through Pema Chodron, who I'm sure will come up a couple of times during the course of these sessions. She's a wonderful teacher in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, not our tradition per se, but amazing Tibetan Buddhist teacher. And some of her writings very much embrace this concept of applying these Tonglen and other teachings to be able to keep our hearts open in the midst of the most difficult times. So I found myself, moving in the direction of wanting to keep my heart open as I was seeing reports of all this suffering, especially in places like New York City at the beginning of the pandemic, when so many people were hospitalized, intubated, who died, all the loved ones who couldn't be with their father, mother, partner, grandparent, whatever, when they were passing away. I mean, there was so much pain, so much difficulty. But this, if we close our hearts to all those things, then of course we don't take advantage of what they can do for us. Not that we should be glad that they're happening, but if it's happening, then let's use it in a spiritual path. Let's use it as some way of trying to remove some of our own barriers to keeping our hearts open and to embracing the suffering of the world. So that's just one example of how these teachings can be used to kind of keep ourselves engaged with reality. As hard, as difficult as this has all been, and the tendency is just to sort of shut it all off and to cocoon. Well, you know, the opposite is actually what will be most beneficial.
It's very inspiring teachings, and I haven't received these myself, and I've been for many years wanted to, and so I'm so delighted that we're all going to be hearing about this in detail from you in the coming month. So Don will be, you'll be starting on next Sunday, August 1st, and then continuing every Tuesday evening, 7 o'clock, Eastern Daylight Time, and on Tuesdays throughout August. So it's not a very long course, but it's going to be, you know, enough for us to really get some good understanding and hopefully some deep experience as we go through this.
Great. No, thank you, Dave. And I'm really honored to have the opportunity to teach this. I've taught this a few times. And every time I teach it, of course, I learn more myself. And that's always the gift of it. Yeah. But I'm happy that I can have the opportunity to share this amazing text with others.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Don.
Thank you, Dave. Okay. All right. Be well. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.